Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is ATCCS, Limar Technical Net, going on for 40 plus years. Every Sunday night, 8 p.m. here, we get together and we chat about amateur radio and technology and science. We exchange information, we teach each other, we learn from each other. Going on for 40 odd years, mostly under the care of Dick KQRIW, who became a silent key a few years ago, but in memory, we continue this exercise. Hopefully, a lot of people join us tonight for another episode of the Limar Technical Net. I will drop for a second, and then I'll come back with my link. Okay, if you can't reach me via the radio, email is a great way. That would be either for mailbag questions, or questions that for one reason or another you can't ask during the technical net, or if you have a topic that you would either like to do a presentation on, or be part of a discussion on, or hear a discussion, or if you have an interesting technology puzzle that I can share with the rest of the audience, and we can learn something or relearn something. Also, if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him what he thinks of NASA or space-related stories, news over the last week, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Of course, you can email Paul directly. He's at spacenetreport@gmail.com. I have a link page of all kinds of interesting articles. When I see something that interests me over the past week, I write it down and I put it in the link page, and it stays there 24/7. So if you're curious and interested, any old time, you just go to your browser and type roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's very, very active. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. You can get to the chat room by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our chat room. And we offer an audio stream, so people who are not in the area don't have access to Echo Link. For one reason or another, if you want to hear it on the internet, I stream W2VL 24/7. So just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. Hear the audio stream of the technical net every Sunday night, and the rest of what goes on at W2VL. And always remember, my KC2NJI has a great archive site of the technical net going back to September of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv, and he has more than a million visitors, so we'll make it a million and one. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, nothing particularly special tonight, no special presentations, unfortunately, no puzzles, unfortunately. We're going to ask for questions of technical nature, preferably amateur radio related at first, but we'll open it up for any kind of discussion of science and technology, and even medicine. We do not treat nor diagnose over the radio, but we certainly can discuss. That should take us to 10:15. Paul will join us, W2N, with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I'll return and put a bow on it and wish you well until next week. So that's the plan. If all the laws of physics maintain themselves, if my radio works, the repeater works, and the universe allows. So with that in mind, we're open for business. Anyone with any technical questions, please hit that push to talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
C2OGB, I got something. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Craig and Rich recognize. Anyone else want to put your name down on the list for tonight? Well, perhaps later some people will join us, or some people will conceive of
some questions
that they can ask. Let's go down our very short list for tonight. Right now, Craig, KD2OGB, what's your question for tonight, Craig?
Perhaps at some point when I get my fixed station set up in my place, the HF radios that I currently have, and I'll probably maybe get four or more, when I put up an antenna, could you theoretically hook it up to more than one HF rig at a time, or can it only be hooked up to one at a time?
Okay, it sort of depends upon what you want to do with it. The most efficient way is to just use switches so that you can switch from one antenna to another antenna and from different locations, always maintaining one connection. If you just want to receive, then you can use splitters, understanding that you're going to drop your input signal by 3 decibels or 50%. But I have cases where I'm not planning to transmit, but I have two radios and I don't have two antennas, one for each, so I use a splitter. But you can't hit the transmit button, otherwise you'll fry the splitter because they're not designed to deal with a lot of watts. So hopefully that answers the question, but if it doesn't, please ask it that, in a way that I can help you.
Okay, something to think about. If I got anything else in mind, I'll give a shout. ACQGS, Net Control, KD2OGB.
Okay, now, well, that was a short one. I would suggest to people out there, if you're going to use a splitter, try and get a good quality splitter, made for the bands that you're interested in, as opposed to, you can go to Amazon and probably for $12 or $8 even, you can get an old TV splitter, which is not the greatest of quality. So, if you're interested, I think it's the Dewa makes a very good quality splitter for UHF, VHF, and such. So it's one that I've been using off and on as my number of antennas unfortunately fall down, and I need to use splitters for some cases. Anyway, any other comments on splitters or using one antenna for more than one radio? Hit that push talk button.
Kind of relates to splitters, but something completely different that I want to put in series.
Okay, Greg, you doubled with Ken. Ken, what do you want to say?
That was probably not Ken, that was probably me. This is WBQZ.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. It got cut off, and I just kind of went by voice recognition and got it terribly wrong. Yes, what would you like to say?
Just to comment on the insertion loss, when you split for a receive antenna, it's usually 6 dB because you're dealing with voltage and not power.
Okay, well, I guess it depends on your defining dBV or dBmW or something, right?
I only deal with dBm, but it's different in voltage than it is for power.
Okay, but So again, I understand where it's two times it's twice the dB for voltage, but so in other words, all these splitters that Super One drop the dB from to count 6 dB.
When you're dealing with receive issues, yes, because it's measured in voltage, microvolts, obviously. and it comes out to 6, it works out to 6 dBm. Anyway, I am just arriving at my first stop. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Okay, thank you for the correction. I do appreciate it. So I guess we move on to you, Rich. What's your question for tonight?
I had something else that involved splitters.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. What is it?
And suddenly it actually came to my mind as soon as, if I did have something else. In my mind, for some reason, I have nothing better else to do and just recently picked up a CB Earth. If I wanted to put a couple of speakers under my car for use as a PA, could I put two speakers together with splitters so that way I can get audio out of both and get it twice as loud?
I'm not quite sure why you would want to use a splitter for something like that, because you're using it to audio frequencies. I mean, it depends upon the output stage of the audio amplifier, what impedance it will tolerate, and if you just hook them up parallel, you'll decrease the total impedance load by one half. But most output circuits will deal with something like that. So I'm not quite sure what you mean by an actual splitter. You know, I was talking more of an RF type of a splitter as opposed to just a splitter for audio frequencies. I mean, theoretically, I guess you could also use a audio transformer so that you can get the same impedance for the two different antennas. But, you know, it's probably easier and would work if you just put them in parallel with each other, as long as you don't have real fiddly amplifier that says you must be an 8-ohm impedance under all circumstances.
I guess so. Think of it like this, because somebody that I once watched had a microphone system set up where he had this 19-inch rack mount thing that can let you attach microphones to it. It was all wireless to begin with, but you, like, hook up XLR cables, like, one channel, two channel, three channel, four, and then the actual master out itself for all four of the microphones went into the mixer as much as only one channel, but he had individual control for all the microphones. Think of it like that, where you can hook up, like, multiple things into, like, only one input.
And two TVU?
Yes, and two TVU.
Yeah, that was November 2, Tango Uniform Uniform. I don't need to interrupt. I'm an AV technician, so maybe I can answer his question for him.
Sure. What's your first name?
Name here is Ed.
Sure, Ed.
Yeah, I didn't get the station to call, but what exactly is it that you're trying to do?
I want to do is put up two speakers, preferably side by side or one facing the opposite direction of the other, to try to get audio out of both of them, mainly for use as a PA system.
Okay, that's very simple. You got most amplifiers are 8-ohm outputs. If you got two 8-ohm speakers, you parallel them, like the guy said, and you got 4-ohm. That's all you got to do. Very simple. Simple Y splitter, and you're in business. In fact, you know, I do AV work at the Cradle of Aviation, and that's all we do on our speakers. We have speakers that have a pass-through, and we're just paralleling them. That's all we're doing. Very simple.
These speakers, I think, have jacks on them that, like, go into the input of the radio. But wouldn't it make sense to, like, put them together somehow, like, actually connect them? Or maybe, like, the audio just goes through both if they're both, like, together, but not actually daisy-chained?
You could daisy-chain them. I would just make them parallel. Put the two speakers in parallel, and that's it. You're good to go. You'll have 4 ohms. The amplifiers can handle without any problem.
Yeah, you can use a Y connector. It's very simple.
that's it. That's a simple answer to your question. It'll work absolutely perfect. Don't have to get more complicated than that.
And how do you get a radio license? You don't know anything.
Anyway, to get back to the other point that you made, Craig, you could have a whole series of XLRs that are switched in and out and, you know, select one or the other or the other. There are switch boxes for XLR inputs and outputs available, but you could build your own if you're so inclined.
I could not hear anything. There was, like, no audio, completely blank, no noise, nothing.
Okay, let me try again. Do you hear me now? Do you hear me now?
Boy, you're fine.
Okay, I don't know what's going on. It might have something to do with the link with the other repeater. Sometimes it goes in, sometimes it goes out. Can you hear me now, Craig?
Right, it's NY2H. I don't know if you can hear me. My mic is a little bad. You're having a link problem.
Okay, I hear you perfectly fine, Lou. Yeah, I thought it might be the link, because that's an ongoing problem we're having, I understand.
Yeah, we're working it. It's a little difficult. We're trying a lot of different things. We'll get it eventually.
Thank you, OGB. I kind of feel upset if you're going to have to repeat everything to me. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I mean, the link problem comes, it goes. I mean, we can give it a try, and if it's just not possible, then it ain't possible. Or you could just go around it and go on to the echo link. That's another option.
Yeah, but you mean 2Z,
yes,
see?
Yes, see.
Yeah, just giving you a heads up, like Lou said, it seems to be a problem. And Lou, remind me to look at that pin tomorrow. Alrighty.
Okay, I don't know, Craig, if you're hearing me or the link just kind of completely is separating us. I'll try one more time. If you hear me and you want to try with the question or discussion, that's fine. Or if you want to jump over to Echo Link where it shouldn't be a problem, you can try that as well.
I can hear you for like a second and then you can go to
Okay, right then, Craig, you were doubling with someone else. I could make out who you were. I couldn't quite make out what the other person would say. So the other person, please repeat themselves because I couldn't understand you.
That was Lou. Craig, to go on to Echo Link because I figured he wasn't hearing you. You should probably hear me on this end.
Stand by.
We're pausing a little while. Craig, hopefully we'll get Echo Link running. And there he is on Echo Link. So now let me drop the repeater so he has the ability to get in through it.
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone now, so I was able to hear you that last time right before I chimed in.
Okay, what I was trying to point out is there are switching boxes, chassis, with XLR Jackson plugs and switches to enable and disable connections, or you can build your own. You know, there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat.
So, to put two horns together, I would have to get a box that has, like, external output, like that one I was mentioning before that involves microphones. You plug them all in, and effectively you can, have more than one speaker hooked up. You can have, like, I don't know, like 20 or 30 of them, but only have the actual cable itself going into, like, one input.
Well, that's a slightly different thing. If you're going to have more than two devices connected simultaneously, you might have a problem with the impedance problem. As Ed mentioned earlier, and I mentioned also, most speakers are about 8 ohms of impedance. If you parallel connect two, it drops to 4 ohms. Most amplifier circuits will deal with that without any problems at all. But if you start to hook up 10 different speakers, you're going to drop the impedance instead of going from 8 to 4. It's going to go from 8 to something like 0.8 ohms. And then you're going to have problems because you're going to introduce such a low impedance to the amplification circuit that it's probably going to fail in a terrible way. So you don't want to string too many passive speakers together like that. You would probably need some kind of buffer interface and separate speaker system to handle more than, say, two 8-ohm speakers. Yes, Steve.
Yeah, just so you think about this, Craig, you don't get something for nothing. If you put 10 watts of audio into one speaker, and you're using two, and then you go to a second additional speaker of the same kind, you're going to split the power between them, and you're still going to get the same approximate level out. So you're gaining nothing.
Well, you're probably getting a little bit more directional spread. You're probably going to lose some in the fact that speakers are not 100% efficient. But, you know, if for some odd reason you want to direct the sound more omnidirectionally, you might benefit with that kind of setup. But if you start to set up more than two speakers, then you have a point of very much diminishing return.
Let me think of it like this. Are you saying that if I daisy chain them, the audio is only going to go through them with less amount of wattage to kind of like make it equal? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I mean, it sort of depends how you're going to hook them up. If you hook them up parallel, the amplifier will see 4 ohms of impedance. If you hook them up, serially is what you mean by daisy chaining them, then you're going to increase the impedance, and the amplifier is going to see a mismatch, and you'll have less efficient energy transfer. But you're not going to be able to squeeze 4 watts of audio by just increasing the transducers. It's the power in the amplifier chain and the efficiency of the transfer that's going to have the effect of generating the watt. If you have a 100-watt amplifier and you hook up 100 speakers, it doesn't mean that you're multiplying the 100 watts of audio by that number. If anything, it's less than it would be if it was just one speaker.
Oh, I get it. So it only puts out, like, like for example a 100 watt amplifier and 100 speakers, it would only put like 1 watt per speaker or 10 watts per speaker. I think that's probably what you're thinking.
Well, again, if you're doing 100 speakers, then theoretically, in a wonderful world that doesn't exist, you would share the 100 watts and each one would use up 1 watt. But in the real world, what's happening is you've changed a 8-ohm impedance to an 800-ohm impedance, and the amplifier circuit wasn't designed optimally to transfer the power into that high impedance. So you'll end up with a total less than 100 watts for all the speakers, and then when you get the distribution of the wiring and all the other losses, you'll get a lot less than a total of 100 watts out of those 100 speakers. So, I don't know, maybe a tenth of a watt per speaker or something like that. It depends upon how the circuits are designed.
Hold on.
Yes, David, I don't know. I get the feeling that I doubled with someone, but you want to say something, David?
Yeah, Daisy Cheney. What if you just hook them up in parallel?
Well, then, if you hook up 100 8-ohm impedance speakers in parallel, you'll get an impedance of what? 0.08? Again, the amplifier isn't quite designed to transfer efficiently over that impedance, so you'll have an impedance mismatch and you'll have a less efficient amplifier, I would say.
Oh, that's...
So your system, I have 2 8-ohm speakers and I hook them off in parallel, it would be COM impedance of 4?
Yes, exactly. If you hook them up in parallel, it's a 4-ohm impedance. If you hook them up in series, it's a 16-ohm impedance. I think Ed was out there doubling with us, so Ed, do you have a comment you want to make?
I have a comment. Am I allowed?
Yes, you're perfectly allowed, Ed. It's just that I tend to be doubling with you, so I don't hear you when you're talking. But yes, you can talk, Ed.
No, I haven't said anything yet. This is Ed, K2GJE. In systems where you want a large number of speakers, maybe a concert hall, you build an amplifier with a lot of output that has a transformer that has an output of 70.7 volts. At each speaker, you have a matching transformer from 70.7 volts to the impedance of that speaker. And usually you supply it with, let's say, an L-pot to make a good audio response from that speaker over.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you can use impedance transformers to get the proper impedance for the optimal transfer of power. But ultimately, the amount of power that is turned into audio signal is directly dependent upon the amplification circuitry of the amplifier and the transfer of energy through impedance matching transformers and such. It's not the number of speakers. You're not going to increase the audio power by simply increasing the number of speakers. You're just going to be able to direct them into various directions and make them more or less directional. But you're not going to be able to increase energy because, you know, energy needs to be conserved, and the energy is created at the point of the power amplifier circuit and the electrical connections to your outlets that are supplying the actual watt.
Would this work, Roy, if you take 10 speakers, Bluetooth speakers, each one
has its own amplifier, and you feed the signal from like a central point. Do you think that would work?
Theoretically, you could, because now you have a power speaker system. It's no longer, you're just feeding the signal to the individual speakers. You're going to have a big problem as far as Bluetooth is concerned, because usually you got to go through some tricks to get Bluetooth to simultaneously pair with more than a few speakers. So it's not like there's an infinite number of pairs capable of Bluetooth chips. Most of them are kind of designed at most to pair with two devices at once. So you have things like speakers that do stereo, because they pair with both of the two. But I haven't seen any speakers that I'm aware of using Bluetooth. They use other technology where you can pair with multiple series of Bluetooth pairs. It's probably easier to simply have a powered speaker hooked up to some kind of local RF receiver transmitter, and you transmit the primary signal on one transmitter and a series of receivers hooked into powered speakers.
QSL. But I was talking about hi-fi. Hi-fi and, let's say, you have a central point. I guess it really depends. If the central point is a computer, then it depends on how advanced your computer is.
It depends upon the technology and the resolution of the transmitter-receiver pair. Most of that is usually very low sound resolution. I think ATT is a variation that allows for a much higher resolution audio using Bluetooth, but most Bluetooth is not the greatest or hasn't been the greatest historically. So it simply depends upon the technology that you're transferring, where you got the signal from, the audio signal, and how you're transferring it. And then, of course, the audio chain, also the powered speakers, will have some effect, good, bad, or indifferent. But it's a lot easier, and you don't have to deal with impedance matching if you're just going to transmit on an RF channel and then just receive it and power a bunch of self-powered speakers. So it's a different question, kind of, than Craig brought up.
Would you say that one major factor would be the audio source, MP3, CD, maybe some other thing, high definition, you know? And I guess Bluetooth, it might be okay, Bluetooth 5.2, probably about CD audio resolution.
Well, yeah, I mean, like the old saying goes, garbage in, garbage out. So you start with the source material. If the source material isn't high resolution, then there's nothing really that you can do to make it that much better. Then you move on to the means that you're going to transfer that to the powered speakers, be it Bluetooth, be it FM, RF. You know, there are many different means of doing it. As far as the Bluetooth 5.1, 5.0, you know, is the latest, greatest variation. Again, I think that's not necessarily also ATT, because a lot of times I've seen the way that the spec read is Bluetooth 5.0 and ATT, so it might be an additional non-standard addition that seems to allow for a higher resolution bit rate and such with the audio. So, yeah, all these things are a factor in the quality of the audio that you get from your source to the output.
I feel like this is all just confusing.
using me now, based on how I could probably just make this work with a standard speaker with a simple jack cord that you could probably plug into, like a phone or something, because that's really how simple I wanted this to be, just only with two speakers, not one. 82 OGB, now mobile.
Okay, that's what we do here. We kind of go down rabbit holes. For your particular case, as Ed has mentioned, as Steve has mentioned, all you really need is a very simple. You go on Amazon and look up Y connector. You do not want unless you want to split a stereo signal, if it's a mono signal, just make sure that the Y connector is not a stereo splitter. And it's just a Y connector. It has whatever plug or jack you need at one end, and two plugs or jacks on the other end. And it's effectively that you're parallel connecting two passive speakers to an active power amplifier circuit. You drop the impedance from 8 ohms to 4 ohms as far as the amplifier is concerned, but most amplifiers will tolerate that with no problem. You will not have the same strength signal in each speaker because you're feeding it to two speakers, but if it's more of the ability to direct one going in the front and the other going in the rear or something along those lines, you'll be able to spread out the audio envelope better, but you're not going to have more audio output total.
Maybe I'd be able to hear it better, but just not really as loud. So you're saying that I just need a Y connector, not a splitter, because I assume there's pros and cons to both.
Now we're dealing with semantics. All that you need for audio signals under these circumstances is a Y connector. You just have to make sure that when you get a Y connector, if you look up Amazon, they have two different types of Y connectors, and that's what I'm just trying to make you aware. There are Y connectors in which it takes a stereo signal and splits it off into the right signal and the left signal. That isn't what I think you want, because I think you are going to tap it out, I might be wrong, tap it out, say, from a radio that gives you basically a mono signal. You just want to feed the mono signal in parallel to two different speakers. So make sure that it's a mono Y connector. They might want to call it a mono splitter, but that's kind of splitting the difference. It's basically just a parallel connection, pre-wired for your convenience.
Oh, I get it. I don't know why this person beeped at me. I wasn't even in the lane. I get it now. So, if I were to have two speakers connected with stereo settings, it would be half and half. But if I did mono, it would still be half and half, but 100% matched audio in both.
Okay, I don't exactly know what that means. Well, let me just try and describe it slightly different, and maybe we'll come to an understanding. You either have two different types of output. On a radio, on your amateur radio, it's really a mono signal. They don't really supply stereo per se. I mean, there are stereo circuits in it, but it's the same signal going to your right and your left unless you adjust your audio circuits accordingly. So you're not really concerned about pumping the right channel in one direction, the left channel in the other. So if your connector on your radio is a three-conductor stereo type of a setup, I guess you could just get the stereo Y connector. But if it's a mono connector, then you would need a mono splitter Y connector. That's basically just a shield and pin a phone a cable that's parallel connected. So it sort of depends upon what kind of radio you want to plug into. If it's a stereo radio and both of the right and the left give you the same signal, you can feed the right signal to one speaker and the left to the other speaker. If it's a mono source that just has a ring and a pin, then you have to make sure to get a Y connector that's designed that way.
When I get this PA, I'm going to run a test with it outside the car, not actually install it, and see if I kind of understand what exactly I'm hearing with my 2 ears, and then I will go from there. 82 OGB Mobile.
Wish you luck. It'll be rather obvious if your PA system is stereo or mono.
K22R1.
Yes, David.
QSL, Roy. You know I have a very minimal ham radio station. I use a ICOM IC718 for HF, and the output of that radio goes into a Y connector, 3.5 millimeter monophonic plug into the back of the radio, and then there are two female 3.5 millimeter ports. I plug one speaker in one port, the other speaker in the other port, and I set them up so that one speaker is right behind the other one to produce a fullness of sound. Maybe this is what Craig is looking to do.
Well, I don't know. We can ask Craig. I got the idea that Craig was more interested in the ability to direct his two speakers in two opposite directions to broaden the area that the speakers, the sound from the speakers covers.
QSL. But I think that's the Y connector that he's looking for. Unless it's stereo.
In the other, or side by side.
Okay, Craig, unfortunately, David was talking over you, and we didn't hear the first half of your comment.
David?
Go ahead, Craig.
It doesn't really matter how I would really have the speaker set up based on how I could get, like, somewhat a little bit of being able to hear it better, but just not really as loud, because it's either going to be side by side or one facing one way and the other facing the opposite way. So it doesn't really matter how I would want to have it set up, as long as I could just hear both at once.
QSL, Craig, try it this way. Try having one speaker in the front and one speaker a few inches behind. Build a fullness of sound from behind and clarity from the front.
I didn't get the speakers yet. I'm actually going to try something with a speaker that I already have that just has a jack on it. I want to run a test because maybe I want to pick up this particular speaker two more times because it's the same speaker that I'm using for my radio because I actually just disconnected it a few little while ago, took it upstairs, and I plugged it into my computer, and it's not really as loud, but with the radio, it's ridiculously loud.
QSL, but you got a volume control, right?
Yeah, but it feels like that it has just a little bass on it, and it doesn't actually have like a horn on it. So I thought I was only hearing low-end frequencies, less than 100 hertz, and not like the full segmented audio.
QSL. I started playing around a while back. I started playing around with Pro Audio. Pro Audio, audio interface, computer, two amplified speakers, and all the cables that go, you know, from one device to the other. And the quality, you know, the quality is amazing.
Well, Pro Audio of the speakers, they're like, what, 20 or 30 each, and all they really have is a jack on it that would go into, like, a phone or whatever.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things you can buy. I mean, you know, plenty of things to buy. But even like a Bose SoundLink Mini, you know, a stereo, what do they call that, like a high fidelity stereo Bluetooth speaker, has a port for stereo input, 3.5 millimeter.
Like I said, when I get the stuff, I'm going to do a test with it outside the car before I install it, and then I'll kind of get the picture, but I think I now know what I'm going to get. I'm going to order it next week, because I don't want to get everything at once, and I want to take my time with it, because maybe my buddy Don at the QHV might be able to kind of explain it a little better to me, which I'll actually bring up to him this Thursday when me, Rich, and Lou go out there to see him.
Good luck with your project, Craig. KG2R1.
David, and I think this is going to wrap it up because I am out of questions at this point, and I am almost to where I need to be. So, AC2GF, net control, KD2OCD, Mobile.
Okay, this is AC2GF. Let me check that I have the repeater. Okay, it seems I have the repeater. You also have to keep in mind of that little thing that I keep mentioning in Phoenix. Different audio circuits are sometimes designed for different impedances. You know, there are different impedance requirements, and if you mismatch them, you're not going to get as much of an energy transfer, so you will have a decrease in the amplitude of the audio output, and depending upon the circuitry, you might even have a shift in the emphasis of the bandwidth of audio that comes out. There are dynamic microphones and there are electric microphones. Most computers only really work with electric microphones. If you try and plug a dynamic microphone into the microphone input of most computers, it'll give you a very, 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 very low amplitude signal because it just can't handle, it requires a lot more gain. And the same goes for amplifier circuits. So you always want to see what these things are designed for as far as the pieces. Are they designed for 8 ohms that we've mentioned before with passive speakers? Are they designed for 600 ohms? Are they designed for 2,000 ohms? You know, piezoelectric earpieces that everyone used to use in the olden days with transistor radios had multi-thousand ohm high impedance sound makers. Loudspeakers are designed for 8 ohm impedances. So that's a different animal entirely. So get to know your impedances and also just look at the specs of what kinds of connections these circuits are designed for. They usually publish those along with the rest of the specification.
Stay up late after my little workout and try to maybe do a little bit of research and write some notes as I go along. So thank you, and 73-82-OGB Mobile.
Okay, very good, Craig. Any other comments before we move on?
Kilo Charlie Niner, Zulu Oscar Whiskey, and Taylor. Would just like to add myself to the list. I have a question.
Okay, Taylor, consider yourself added to the list. So, Rich, your next stop, W2BZ. What's your question tonight, Rich?
Hello, Roy. Hello, everybody. I am transmitting from Queens with a Mac mount on the fire escape, so let me just ask you if you can hear me okay.
You sound fantastic tonight.
Well, I guess it's because I'm 70 miles closer to the big repeater. Anyway, another basic RF question. What is a beat frequency oscillator and how is it used?
Okay, beat frequency oscillator is a separate oscillator that you adjust off your carrier frequency for something like CW, so that when it oscillates, you get a difference of an audio frequency that's pleasing to your ear. So with a beat frequency oscillator, you can adjust the tone of a CW signal to any kind of frequency you like. Some people like 600 hertz, some people like 800 hertz. So that's the short and the long of a beat frequency oscillator.
And how does it actually manipulate the tone?
It's an oscillator with a variable frequency that goes through a mixer. So it mixes with the carrier signal that you're usually receiving, and the difference between the carrier signal and your beat frequency oscillator signal then gets filtered out and amplified as an audio signal.
Okay, that's what I was missing. So it's injecting a signal into the carrier. Is that correct? Injecting a signal into the carrier, which then you can adjust. And is it just for the tone? You know, is it the frequency oscillator is just for a more pleasing tone to your ear?
Well, the fact that it's variable allows you to adjust the frequency, but because a CW is simply a carrier, there's no inherent audio tone to a carrier. You have to insert your own. So it may not be the original received carrier. It depends where the beat frequency oscillator is injected. If it's injected past the IF stages, it changes what the carrier frequency as far as the receiver is concerned. But the bottom line is you want to inject an audio frequency signal onto a carrier wave that doesn't have one. Otherwise, I guess you would just hear clicks where the carrier kind of went on and off and such. So you need a beat frequency oscillator to inject an audio tone so that you'll perceive the signal better than in the old days. The wire telegraphs didn't have buzzers or anything. They just learned how to read Morse code from the clicking of the relay. So with hams, we like the hum of the CW signal at a particular frequency, and the beat frequency oscillator will give you a frequency and will let you adjust it to a pleasing tone.
Ed White Switch.
Yes, Lou.
Yeah, I also believe in the early days on a receiver, like an AM receiver, if you had a BFO, you could also use it to listen to sideband, so it would substitute for the missing or suppressed carrier on sideband. And so not just CW, but I believe it was used for sideband also.
Yeah, you could do that. Matter of fact, I probably tell this story far too many times. When I was a kid, I had an AM/FM transistor shortwave radio, and I wanted to listen to single sideband. So I discovered that my even cheaper AM radio's IF oscillator could be tuned right off frequency, and I could recover single sideband transmission. So I used an external beat frequency oscillator that just leaked RF into the circuits of the mixer stage and was able to listen to single sideband that way.
So speaking to Lou's point, do all receivers have a BFO in them?
Well, yes, to my understanding, I guess if it was FM, you don't need a beat frequency oscillator for an FM. But for CW and such, yeah.
All right, because on my Kenwood 440, there is no adjustable pot for a BFO, so the way you change the tone of the CW signal is just by varying the frequency a little bit, you know, one side or the other.
Well, it's probably wired directly into the receiver circuits themselves, so changing the carrier frequency is going to offset the effect of B-frequency oscillator in the same way that if you're listening to single sideband and you're slightly off the carrier frequency, it'll shift the frequency up or down and you'll sound low-pitched or high-pitched. So it's a kind of built-in circuit that's not particularly designed for you to vary. But in the past, I think they were variable for, especially for the case of CW.
Lou, let me ask you, is it true in today's, I know about the old AM rigs back in the day, but today does to receive single sideband, do all receivers have to have built in to them a BFO to get single sideband or not?
I seem to recall from my youth, and I might be misguided now that I'm old and feeble, but remembering a bridge circuit with diodes somehow being used as a sideband detector. So I wouldn't be positive that all have that inserted carrier or not. I think there are other ways to, certainly today in the globally defined world, I'm sure there are other ways to modulate the sideband. But I think to recall in my past, not a bridge circuit made up of diodes, as a key detector, although I can be mistaken.
DDA, you can comment. Yes, John, one second. I just want to mention that for non-SDR people, usually my understanding for AM and single sideband signals, a conic detector is the usual device that's used, and part of the product detector takes a local oscillator to perform its magic. So prior to SDRs, I think they all had, they called them local oscillators, they called them B-frequency oscillators, but it went through a product detector. But John, you want to say something?
Yeah, what you're thinking of, the gentleman who just commented was thinking of, is a sliding detector can be built with a diode ring type of structure, and it has an input for the BFO. It has an input for the beat frequency oscillator for single sideband detection, okay?
Just another form of mixer.
Yes.
So, Rich, you basically got your answer. With software-defined radio, it gets more obscure because we use algorithms and shuffle bits on the IQ bits that are available on a computer. But otherwise, in the analog world, there is a local oscillator and a mixer involved in single-sideband detection.
So would you say in the non-SDR world, putting aside SDRs for a second, that a BFO is an obsolete circuit? Would that be fair to say it's been replaced by other methods of demodulating?
No, I would say no. If you want to call it a beat oscillator, or you want to call it a local oscillator, you stick to one half a dozen of the other. You still use an oscillator. If you want to call it a beat frequency oscillator, or simply a local oscillator, they function is like equivalent things. They're identical. It's just semantics.
VDH comments.
Yes, John.
Yeah, the term local oscillator is reserved for the oscillator that does the conversion to the intermediate frequency, whereas the VFO is usually in the IF path, and it operates with a product detector. So that term local oscillator is usually reserved for the conversion to IF.
Okay, I thought it was also used in defining how a product detector works.
Yeah, the oscillator with the project detector is usually called the BFO, beat frequency oscillator. The local oscillator is the one that usually does the IF conversion. The incoming signal is converted.